WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number two of the program here on Tuesday morning. And it is December 17th. That means you are 1 week away from Christmas Eve. May not feel like it out there today. It's in the 50s. It'll be in the 50s. But the rain is going to subside soon enough. I think you've got enough of the rain that we needed. I don't know what our drought status is right now, but I saw a graphic earlier on ABC6 that said that we are well over what the average December rainfall is already. But I don't know where that's gotten us in terms of the drought. So there's a story that I want to share with you from WCVB.com. Remember the story of Lindsay Clancy. She is the woman who is accused of strangling her three young children with exercise bands before she jumped out of the window of her family's home. This happened in 2023 in Duxbury. We talked about this story quite a bit. We talked about postpartum depression and where the line is drawn between sympathy for that and anger over a murder, a triple murder. So according to WCVB, ahead of a case status conference scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, two new entries were added last Friday to Clancy's case in Plymouth County Superior Court's online docket. One document is labeled as the state's motion for a trial date, and the other is a, quote, defendant's notice of lack of criminal responsibility. And it states, now comes the defendant, Lindsay Clancy, in the above-captioned matter pursuant to Rule 14BB, that statements of the defendant as to her mental condition will be relied upon by defendant's expert witnesses, and the defendant does intend to present the court a defense of lack of criminal responsibility. So basically saying she's not criminally responsible for the murder of her three children due to her mental state. However, and her attorney, Kevin Reddington, has said that she was over-medicated on the day of the murders. And the prosecutors say that she knew what she was doing because she sent her husband out to pick up medicine and dinner, even mapping out how long the trip would take. So that she knew how long it would take. She knew what the route would be that he would take, and that allowed her to plan out how much time she had. Her husband, Patrick Clancy, said in a recent interview in the New Yorker that he once asked his wife for answers. And he said, this is what he said to the New Yorker. I think one of the first things I asked was, did you plan this? Is that why you sent me out? And she said, no, it was just like a snap of the fingers. So this is according to Channel 5's reporting here. They said that according to Massachusetts law, the defense only needs to make the argument that Lindsay Clancy was not guilty by reason of insanity. And according to their legal experts, Channel 5's legal experts, it will then be on the state to prove Clancy was sane and was criminally responsible the night her children were killed. So I don't think we're going to get any answers to this on Wednesday because it's just a status conference. But this is a story that ignited a conversation nationwide about the need for better mental health discussions for new mothers. And this is a case that caught a lot of people off guard. I mean, of course, it would catch people off guard anyway, but just because it's postpartum depression with her third child. And that's the thing. Postpartum depression doesn't fit into a box, doesn't fit into a description, a definition. The same way really no depression does. But the idea of, well, this is her third child, so she should be used to it by now. Like that doesn't hold water. Because we don't know the dynamic of the family. This could have been her last child, and she could have known this is her last child. This could have been something that she dealt with the other two children and never really got over, and that this just kind of exacerbated it. So there's a lot that goes into it, but the way that it works, as News Center 5 said, you just have to say that she was insane, and then the state has to prove that she wasn't. And I think that's going to be a very hard thing to prove to a jury or to a judge, considering how heinous this was, but also considering how, by all reports, how much of a loving mother she was until those moments. This was not something that, from all accounts, was an ongoing buildup of resentment toward her children. As she told her husband, it was just a snap of the fingers that she just decided to do this. So I can only imagine that debate will pick up and rage on when it actually comes to the trial. But just as, the Michelle Carter case shined a spotlight on mental health and the resources and the help that we need to have available for people suffering through it. And hopefully all of the media coverage and the sensationalism of Conrad Roy's death helped with some of that. Helped save someone else that was going through something similar. And hopefully this will do the same. Because I think postpartum depression is something that people... And even if the state successfully proves that that's not what this was, it's still part of the conversation here. And hopefully it shines a light on the fact that it is a tough time for mothers to go through, and that we shouldn't just ignore it, which is what people too often do when they see obvious signs of depression with somebody. They're not emotionally equipped themselves to be able to deal with it. They don't know what to say. They don't know what the right thing to say is or the right thing to do is. So they just ignore it. They just don't confront it. They don't face it. And that's worse than saying the wrong thing. Because even saying the wrong thing means at least you noticed and you cared. And you saying the wrong thing gives them the opportunity to tell you that it was the wrong thing and why and how they're feeling about it and talking through some of that. And I think that we've got to understand that it's more of an issue than we want to let on. That just because some people, some women, can soldier through it better than others or don't let it really take them out of their day-to-day, doesn't mean that they're still not dealing with it. 508-996-0500. And let's see, what was the other story I wanted to... There's another story I was going to bring up. This one. So there's a story about a mother whose body was found in a Cambridge basement more than 30 years ago. This happened in 1992. Michelle Miller was found in the basement of a vacant apartment in Cambridge about 2 weeks, 2 weeks later after she was murdered, after a neighbor complained of a foul odor. And now it turns out she was the victim of a murder-for-hire plot devised by her abusive partner and the father of her children, Daniel J. Innes. And he apparently hired Edward Watson, an associate of his, to kill her in a basement apartment. This was a woman who had served as a U.S. Army soldier and was a mother to two children. But by 1992, had fallen on hard times and was abused by a jealous and violent partner. This comes from the district attorney, Marion Ryan, who had threatened to take away custody of her children. On July 28th, 1992, the day after she told her social worker of her intention to obtain a restraining order against that abusive partner, she disappeared. She was found 2 weeks later, partially naked, with her face covered by a blanket in the filthy basement of an abandoned building in the Central Square neighborhood of Cambridge. So they arrested Edward Watson, the man accused of actually murdering her in Mattapan, and he was arraigned Monday afternoon on a charge of first-degree murder and ordered held without bail. However, Innes, the man who hired him to do it, and the former partner of Miller, he died in 2012. And not long after, just 2 years after her murder, he was sentenced to 15 to 20 years in state prison for an unrelated manslaughter charge. But he died in 2012, so he's not going to, unfortunately, face any charges in the murder of Miller. But this reminds me of, I used to, when I worked at Mill Pond Diner, I think I've told this story before, so bear with me if you've heard it. But when I worked at the diner, there was this guy named Ed, who was the most miserable guy. And he would come in at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and he always wanted soup. And quite often at 9 o'clock in the morning, we didn't have the soup ready yet for the day. You know, if we were reheating soup from the day before, which we would do quite often, you know, if we had, well, what we would do is we would make a big batch of soup, like a big pot of it, and then we put it in the cooler, and we would make a steam table pan of it and put that on the steam table. And at the end of the day, you toss that out. The next day, you go down, you get another steam table pan of that soup, and you put it on. But if we were making the soup still and didn't have it ready yet, you know, this guy was just a real pain. Especially on Fridays, because Fridays we made fresh chowder every Friday, and he would come in at 9 o'clock looking for chowder. It's like, dude, we haven't even chopped the clams yet. We're still cooking breakfast for people. But he was just a real jerk. He was rude to everybody. None of the servers wanted to wait on him. He was just miserable. But he came in every single day, right at 9 o'clock, looking for a soup. Until one day he didn't come in. And the next day he didn't come in. And in that business and that type of a business, you see the same people every day. You can set your watch by them. I had people that I cooked for, not based on when the slip came in for them, but based on the clock. So I would look up and be like, oh, yep, time to make Ricky's breakfast, time to make Swifty's breakfast. I would just whip them up at that time, because I knew they were coming in like clockwork to get them. So rather than wait for the slip, and then they would come in, sit down at the counter, the server would bring over their breakfast all ready to go. So when somebody doesn't come in, you get concerned. We used to get phone calls from some of the regulars that would say, oh, yeah, I'm not feeling well today, so I'm not going to be in. Like, you do realize you don't work here, right? You don't have to call in to say that you're not coming in, but thank you, because now we're not going to assume that you're dead. But this guy, Ed, didn't come in for a couple of days. And then we found out why when it was on the front page of the Cape Cod Times. Ed was arrested. I want to say this is probably the early 2000s. It turns out that in the early 1980s, he had hired someone to murder his wife. And he finally got caught 20-something years later. Can you imagine? Like, do you live your life thinking to yourself every single day, I wonder if today's the day I'm going to get caught? Or do you eventually get a feeling of, well, it's been 5 years. They haven't gotten me yet, so I guess I got away with it. Like, how do you mentally process that? How do you do that? How do you live a life every day? And by the way, if I was going to do that, I'd be the most low-key guy in the world. I don't think I'd be walking into a diner every day complaining because I can't get my chowder at 9 a.m. I don't think I would do anything that would make me memorable to anybody. I don't think I would do anything that would make me adversarial to anybody. But they caught him. 20-something years later, they caught him, and he went to prison. Rightly so. But just crazy. And now we have this case here where, you know, 30 years later, I wonder, did this guy think that he'd gotten away with it for all these years? Or was he always looking over his shoulder? 30 years. And kudos to those who worked that case and didn't give up on it and kept fighting for justice to make sure that Michelle Miller's killer was brought to justice. All right, we're going to take a break here. 508-996-0500. App chat on the WBSM app. Open line voicemails in the WBSM app. We'll be right back. Deep inside. Welcome back and say, I've got some great news for Rochester residents and maybe also people who live in Plimpton, if you're listening to me, but certainly Rochester, I know you're out there listening. I miss Dirty Deb. Rochester! But those of you who live in Plimpton and Rochester, on Thursday, this coming Thursday, December 19th, you get free bronze tickets to Edaville. That's right. Edaville Family Theme Park in Carver is offering Plimpton and Rochester residents free bronze tickets on Thursday, December 19th. Now, it's only in park, so you can't get your tickets online that way. You have to go to the park, and you have to be able to show proof of residency. But you'll get a free bronze ticket that gets you into the park, and then you can go in and get the add-ons for the train ride, for the amusement rides, the horse-drawn carriage if you want to do that, all that different stuff. Because that's how Edaville is priced now. You can go in there and get in to the park for as little as $12.95 and then add on and customize your Edaville experience to make it more affordable way to get the family in to see the Festival of Lights. And you get to walk around and experience all those lights and decorations. You also get to see Santa Claus. You also get to shop in some of the Christmas market stores. Stop by the antique guy. He's got such great Edaville stuff in there. And every time I go, I buy more stuff to add to my Edaville shrine in my office. But you can also, as I said, add on to your experience. So if you want to ride the vintage amusement park rides, if you want to ride the steam train, if you want to ride some of the newer rides that they have, you can add on to that experience. So Plimpton and Rochester residents get in with a bronze ticket for free. Everybody else, you can get in starting at just $12.95. And what you want to do, if you're not a Plimpton or Rochester resident, is you want to go to Edaville.com and get your tickets now so that you can make sure you get them before they're gone for the Festival of Lights. And maybe this weekend I'll see you over there. Trying to make sure I've got the time to get over there. I haven't been there since last year, so. All right, right now it is time to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
A deadly shooting at a Wisconsin school under investigation. Trump says he'd consider pardoning the mayor of New York City. And that's no drone. How to track Santa's sleigh this season.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Three people are dead and several more injured following a school shooting in Madison, Wisconsin. A teacher and student at Abundant Life Christian School were shot and killed by a teenage student on Monday. At least six students were wounded in the shooting, two last listed in critical condition and four recovering. Lawmakers are still demanding answers about the recent surge in mystery drone sightings. Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas told ABC News this week that more personnel and technology will be used to help New Jersey State Police address the sightings there. President-elect Trump says he thinks the government knows exactly where the drones are coming from. Trump also says he'd consider pardoning New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who's facing federal corruption charges. Trump told reporters at Mar-a-Lago that he believes Mayor Adams was treated pretty unfairly. Trump added that he predicted Mayor Adams would be indicted after his strong statements about the migrants coming into New York City. A Manhattan grand jury could return a murder indictment this week against the man accused of killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The indictment would then trigger the governor to issue a warrant to extradite murder suspect Luigi Mangione to New York from Pennsylvania, where he's been since his arrest there a week ago. His attorney plans on challenging any extradition proceeding. Meanwhile, Mangione's hired a high-profile attorney to his defense team, who once served as a Manhattan chief assistant district attorney. More people than ever are riding Amtrak. The train service set an all-time ridership record in 2024, with nearly 33 million people riding the rails. That's up 15% from 2023. And get ready to track Santa's Christmas Eve adventure. NORAD and Google are both offering exciting ways to follow the jolly old elf's journey. NORAD's website and app will provide real-time updates on Santa's location, while Google's Santa Tracker will offer fun games and interactive experiences. So whether you prefer a classic approach or a high-tech twist, you can join in the fun of tracking Santa this Christmas Eve.
WBSM Sports.
The Boston Bruins are away to play the Calgary Flames tonight at 9 o'clock. The Celtics are home at TD Garden in Boston on Thursday to play the Chicago Bulls.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
A rainy and overcast Tuesday in store for us here on the South Coast. A high of 55 degrees, a low tonight of 35. We'll get a break in rain on Wednesday, even some sunshine, a high of 51, a low of 39. But that rain moves right back in on Thursday, and it'll be colder later in the week with temperatures in the 30s. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Welcome back. And that's not actually candy rain that's falling from the sky. That's just regular rain. I am being for real. I'm being soul for real right now with you. Anyway, 90s kids will get the those puns. But anyway, Aaron says, what was that store that you were going to talk about? You're right. I'm sorry. I got sidetracked. What is the store I was going to talk about? Well, if you go to the internet, there's no proof it ever existed. I can't find anything on what was one of my favorite stores of all time. There was one in Brockton. There was one in Raynham. And those are the only two that I can think of that I'm aware of. But you might have known of some other locations. The name of the store was called Cash Converters. And it was, I wrote about this last week on Friday. And I got a few messages from people that said, I vaguely remember that store, but I guess maybe because there wasn't one around here or, you know, like in New Bedford, or maybe there wasn't. I just don't know. But it seems like people are not as familiar with it as I thought they might be. But this was like, it was like a higher end pawn shop. And I don't mean higher end like it was fancy, but, you know, it wasn't what you think of typically with a pawn shop. And when you would, from my understanding, from my recollection, and I could be wrong, you didn't pawn items there. Which I think is interesting because it probably got them around some, you know, some of the restrictions that happen when you have a pawn shop. You know, you've got to hold on to things for a certain amount of time and things like that. But when you go to a pawn shop, if you want to pawn an item, you can go into a pawn shop and say, hey, I just want to sell you this. And they can buy it outright from you and then turn around and sell it. There is a waiting period, I guess, to make sure that it isn't stolen property. But then what people do when they pawn an item is they'll bring in something of value to get a short-term loan, and then they'll have to pay back that loan to get the item back. And if they don't pay the loan back, they default in the loan, then the pawn shop can sell the item. So quite often when you walk into a pawn shop, you know, the items that you're buying were something somebody brought in, maybe with the intention of coming back to get back, and just never had the money to do so. But the Cash Converter store, I think, worked differently. I think you just brought in items that you wanted to sell, and they bought them from you, and then eventually they made their way onto the floor, and people could buy them. And they had everything. They had tools. They had auto parts. They had video games. They had DVDs at a time when DVDs were still new. Electronics. I bought a lot of electronics at Cash Converters. And it was kind of, you know, I think they had clothes. Not like a whole bunch of clothes, but like, you know, like leather jackets and things like that. And it was just, it was great. I walked in there one time and they had a dirt bike for sale. Somebody had brought in and sold them a dirt bike. And I don't know when these stores went away. I want to say they popped up in the mid to late 90s. I think I heard about it from my aunt and uncle. Because my uncle is a tool collector. So not only is he a carpenter, but he collects tools as well. So he had this big collection of vintage tools. So he was always going to places where he could find these things. And so they told me about this place, and I went there and checked it out, and I just was amazed. They had a little bit of everything. I bought a Sony Watchman there. Like the little TV, the little portable color TV. And you would walk around with it and had the big antenna and you could watch TV wherever you were. And it was great. Because I used to have to work on Sundays at the diner and I could put that in the back and watch the Patriots games. And in fact, years later when I covered the Patriots, I'd bring that with me and set it up on the desk at the in the press box, so I could watch the broadcast on that. Even though they have TVs in the press box for you to watch, like I did it anyway. Then eventually, with the HD signals, those things stopped working, and I don't know what happened to it after that. I probably gave it away to somebody or sold it at a yard sale. But I got video games there. I got, I don't know if I bought DVDs there because I think I might have been a little late to the DVD game. And then I bought VHS tapes there. I'm trying to think of what else. I bought a Discman there to put in my car. But it was just such a eclectic store. But I went away. I wonder if something like that would work again today. People, thrifting is bigger than it's ever been. Young people are really into it. We had that story a couple weeks ago about how more and more young people are thrifting for Christmas gifts for people. But you just need to walk into a thrift store, a secondhand store, a consignment store, and see the clientele that are in there to realize, like, yeah. Yeah, younger people are definitely getting into this. I was in Savers last week, and there were a bunch of kids that were probably between, like, 16 and 20, different groups, who were walking around the store and trying on clothes and acting kind of obnoxious too, but still. Like when I was that age, if people found out that I was going to a thrift store to buy my clothes, who knows? Certainly when I lived in Sandwich, I would have gotten razzed, but in Wareham was a different story. There were the kids, obviously the kids who, you know, the punk and alternative kids that thrifted everything back in those days. But they were looking for vintage stuff. I was somebody that was going in and looking for, you know, what everybody else was wearing, but just wanted to pay less. And so for younger kids now to say, yeah, I get all my stuff at thrift stores, it's kind of mind-blowing, but also understandable because you pay more money for clothes in the stores now that are, the quality is less. That's why, like, I don't like to buy any clothes in Walmart anymore. You know, maybe some t-shirts or certainly like socks and underwear. But I don't like to spend money on a shirt in there when I can get for just a few dollars more, maybe even the same price, a much better quality shirt at a JCPenney or Marshall's or Burlington. Now that I can actually fit in clothes from those stores. But I get why kids and people are thrifting more and more today. But also people love those deals. It's not just about saving money on the things that you need. It's about finding those hidden gems. And a store like Cash Converters was the perfect place to find those hidden gems because you never knew when you walked in what was going to be there. And if I picked up some extra shifts working at the diner and I had some extra money in my pocket, I'd be like, I'm going to go to Cash Converters, see what they got. Because back in those days, all my income was disposable. I had to pay two things, my car insurance and my beeper bill. My car insurance, I think, was like $120 a month, and my beeper was like, I think, $10 a month or something like that. Man, those pagers. It wasn't just the fact that we had the pagers. It's the fact that we accessorized those pagers. You had like a little sheath to put it in that would clip onto your pocket. I had the chain that would go from my belt to the pager or from my pocket to the pager. You had, you could bedazzle it if you wanted to do that. You had your clip-on cases. So you can get your Patriots case, your Red Sox case, your WWF case. the silly things that we did. I mean, even cell phones when they first came out had all these like ridiculous accessories. I remember replacing the antenna on my Motorola phone with one that would light up different colors. And you could program it so that if this person was calling, it lit up this color. If this person was calling, it lit up that color. But anyway, yeah, if you know anything about cash converters, give me a call, 508-996-0500. Shoot me an app chat message on the WBSM app. Email me, Tim, at WBSM.com. Just any information that you have. I can't even find when they went away. I have, in my mind, I picture myself going there and buying movies and games from my PlayStation Portable. But I think the store was already gone by the time I had a PSP. So, I don't know. Maybe it never existed at all. Maybe it's just a fever dream. No, I shared the story in the article that when my grandfather died, all the movies that he had recorded off television over the years, hundreds of VHS tapes, that was his hobby, recording war movies and action movies off TV, and in buying a few here and there in the store, but basically it was mostly stuff he taped off Channel 38 or Channel 25 or 56 or whatever, and he didn't even have cable. But he would have all these movies and he would just pull them out randomly and watch them. And that's what he did all day. He worked during the day, like in the yard or in the cellar workshop. And then he would, you know, from like 3 or 4 o'clock on, just watch movies. And when he passed away, they brought his tapes to cash converters. And I was upset because I didn't get a chance to, you know, at least take a few of them as a memento because we used to sit there and watch them together. And he had his own like rating system and he would write on them like damn good on the label, or he would write like about a particular scene, or, you know, if there was nudity in it, he would mark it in a crass way. But that's what he would do. And so I just wanted to have a few of those to kind of remember him by. And I was kind of upset that I didn't get to do that. And years later, I go to a yard sale and there in the yard sale is just a box of all of his tapes. Apparently this person had gone to cash converters and just bought them all. And my wife at the time was in the car with our son, who was very young. And like they waited in the car while I was looking at this yard sale. And she just sees me coming back, carrying this big cardboard box with tears coming down my eyes. And I put the box in the trunk or in the back seat. And I'm like, just drive, just drive. She's like, why, what's wrong? I was like, just drive. I'll tell you. I can't tell you right now, but I'll tell you. Just very profound. But yeah, cash converters. Do you remember it? 508-996-0500. This is how I would sing if something smelled funny in the room. I'd be like, Do your dance, quick now. So that's how it would sound. Anyway, 508-996-0500. We are going to be taking one final break here coming up before the end of this hour. And then the next hour, more with you, 508-996-0500. We can talk about, so do you remember during the election, when the poll came out that suggested that Kamala Harris had a chance to win Iowa? Well, Donald Trump has apparently filed a lawsuit against the Des Moines Register, the paper that published the article about it, and Ann Selzer, the pollster who got it wrong, and who I believe said she was going to retire from polling after getting it wrong. But Trump filed the lawsuit in Polk County, Iowa, under the Iowa Consumer Fraud Act and related provisions, and is basically accusing Selzer, the Des Moines Register, and his parent company, Gannett, for, quote, brazen election interference and fraud. After Selzer incorrectly predicted that the swing state would go for Kamala Harris just the day before the presidential election. And Trump went on to win the state by 13 percentage points. Wah. What a child. How is a poll election interference? I also said the day before the election that Kamala Harris was going to win. Are you going to sue me for election interference? You stupid dolt. But get used to it. This is what you signed up for. You signed up for 4 years of the man-child whining about everybody who has made him upset and trying to use the presidency to get back at them all. That's what you signed up for. That's what you're going to get. And eventually it's going to turn around and get you somewhere you didn't expect that it would. And then I'm going to sit back and laugh. Anyway, got to take one final break here. We'll be right back. All right, that's going to do it for this hour, but we'll take a break.